Hello. It's September 27th, 2024. My name is Simone, and this is a special edition of 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are preparing to have a great weekend. And why is today's episode a special edition episode of the show? Well, this episode is what I like to call a mini-sode, where I couldn't find much information on a certain case, but I still wanted to make it an episode. I'll go ahead and warn you that today's episode is very short, but I think you'll still find it interesting. And I'll also go ahead and warn you that listener's discretion is advised because this episode is very graphic. And with that, let's dive in to today's case. The year was 1993, and in the small town of Windsor, North Carolina, the county seat of Birdie County, this town was very close-knit. How could it not be? After all, in 1993, a report states the population was around 2,000 people, and many families had been living here for decades. So many grew up together. Also, reports state that at any time, the locals could meet up together to catch up or mingle with the latest gossip. They'd do so anywhere in town, from the post office, grocery store, church, or anywhere in town. Speaking of the grocery store, this was where many Windsor locals caught up with one another and have small talk, especially at the newest grocery store to hit the town in 1990. However, 3 years after the opening of the brand new store, something so horrific would happen that it would leave a nasty mark on the town of Windsor, and even worse, would leave people asking, who did it? In the following case, you'll find out about the awful event, the investigation, and the shocking aftermath in a case I title, Massacre at the Market. On the evening of June 6, 1993, the town of Windsor, North Carolina, was quaint and quiet, like a typical Sunday after church, with not much action interrupting the warm spring night. In town sat the town's latest grocery store, Belo Grocery Store, and the staff there too, around 6 p.m. that evening, were winding down and getting ready to leave the store. Inside the store that evening was 47-year-old Grover Bud Cecil, the store manager who'd been at Belo a little less than a year, and he was walking around the store to tell any last-minute customers that the store was closing. Also in the store was 36-year-old cashier Joyce Reason, counting down her drawer and waiting for any last-minute tasks Grover may have wanted her to do before she headed home. A little before 6 p.m., a local cleaning crew consisting of 48-year-old Johnny Rankin, brothers Jasper and Thomas Hardy, and Sylvester Tony Welch Jr. arrived to clean after the store closed. Reports state the crew was to do a deep clean of the store to make it all nice and shiny for the following week's customers. After the cleaning crew was let in, Groover made the run-through throughout the store and thought all customers had left. All seemed to be going pretty routine inside Belo. But what Groover didn't realize was that someone was indeed still inside the store. And around 6:30 p.m. that evening, a 911 call came inside to the Birdie County Police Department.
What's wrong?
Emergency personnel arrived at the store shortly after the 911 call was made. And inside, they found the 911 caller, Tony Welch, who had been shot in his back and who had managed to crawl to the phone near the front of the store. And coming from his body was a long trail of blood. As some of the officers on the scene tended to Tony, others followed the trail of blood, which led them to the store's office. And inside, they found 5 more victims. However, reports state Jasper Hardy was unharmed, but his brother Thomas's throat had been slashed, and he had been stabbed in his back. And Grover, Joyce, and Johnny were all shot. Grover and Joyce in their heads, and Johnny in his back. However, police had to clear the scene to watch out for any suspects that may be in the store. And once the scene was cleared, they realized whoever committed these acts of violence was long gone, and they allowed paramedics inside to tend to the victims. Reports state paramedics took the severely injured Tony and Thomas to the hospital, but not Joyce, Johnny, and Grover, as they were declared dead on the scene. During the investigation, detectives discovered around $3,000 missing from the store safe, and the overwhelming smell of blood coming from the victims and the office. They also discovered several shell casings from the gun used at the scene around the victims and shoe prints throughout the massive amount of blood. They dusted for fingerprints throughout the store, but since it was a supermarket, there were multiple prints belonging to many different people, so they couldn't pinpoint a single suspect. So they had to get information from the surviving victims. Reports state that lead detectives spoke to unharmed victim Jasper Hardy, and he told them what he witnessed. Jasper told them that as he was sweeping the store to prepare for the deep cleaning he and his crew planned for later that evening, he saw Grover and Joyce approach him, as well as an unfamiliar man behind them. Jasper added that as the group approached him, Joyce and Grover had strange looks on their faces, and as they got closer, he noticed the unfamiliar man with a gun pointed to their backs. Then Grover told Jasper the man, quote-unquote, meant business. Then the man told Jasper to follow them. Jasper continued and said that the man led them through the pet supplies aisle and grabbed some leashes, and then he led them towards the back of the store to the office. On the way there, the gunman ordered Johnny and Thomas to join them. And once they got to the office, he ordered Jasper to find Tony and bring him back there too. Jasper told detectives that once all the workers were in the office, the unknown man yelled at them that he used to be a police officer. He was recently fired from his job, and that he had nothing to lose. He then handed the six hostages the leashes and a roll of duct tape and told them to bind each other. And then said, quote unquote, "I don't want to have to kill anybody." The suspect then managed to take $3,000 from the safe, and then Jasper thought it was over. Especially since no one was trying to fight him, and even if they tried, they were all tied up, and they were far too far from a phone to get help at that moment. However, Jasper told detectives the man grabbed his gun again and ordered the hostages to get on the floor on top of one another in three stacks. And then said, quote unquote, "Lord, forgive me for what I'm about to do." And then he heinously shot the person on top of each stack. He then tried to shoot again, but ran out of ammo, and then left the office. By now, it's believed Joyce, Grover, and Johnny are dead. But Tony is uninjured, leaving Jasper and Thomas unscathed. However, the suspect came back with a knife and asked the brothers if they would identify him. Thomas said they wouldn't, but the suspect yelled at him and said he didn't believe him, and then proceeded to slash Thomas's throat and stab him again in his back with so much force the knife broke off from his handle. Jasper then told detectives the suspect asked him if he was going to identify him, and Jasper told him no. Then the suspect gave a long pause and surprisingly told Jasper, quote unquote, "Okay, big man, I'll let you live." Then, according to Jasper, the suspect grabbed a bag, threw in the money and the knife handle, and headed out the office door. But before leaving, he stopped at Grover's body and snatched the store's keys from his pocket. He then fled into the night. Lastly, he added that the man did not hide his face, that he was black with a slender build, and that he had slanted light brown eyes and a narrow nose. Detectives thought they had a good lead and good information from Jasper, but they still wanted to speak to Tony and Thomas. However, they were not yet stabilized. Reports state that as the shooting at Belo started to reach around town, people who lived nearby came forward with their own information. Some witnesses told detectives they saw a white car speed from the store and that it was two men in the car. Also, drivers that night near the store stated they saw the car had Maryland plates and that the car sped fast onto the nearby US 17. Some drivers even reported the car's driver to police as they had been driving erratically, but police didn't catch up with them in time. However, when police questioned other people living near Belo about what they saw, many of the residents nearby reported seeing or hearing nothing out of the ordinary, as did workers at stores nearby the grocery store. In the days after the shooting occurred, Thomas and Tony's condition stabilized, and they pretty much agreed with what Jasper told police. As the news of the shooting spread state and nationwide, tips came in from around the eastern and Midwestern parts of the United States, but nothing really came from them. The police still had no real leads. The finger and shoe prints found at the scene came up with no match. The casings found at the scene couldn't be matched with any other crime that occurred in the area, and police felt they were back at square one and requested help from the FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies. Reports state, though, that even with the other agencies joining the investigation, nothing much came from it. A week after the massacre, B-Lo reopened, but due to former customers feeling uneasy about ever going back there, the store closed for good the next month in July 1993. 2 months later, in September 1993, police had offered a reward of $30,000 for any information about the suspect or suspects of the B-Lo murders. But no new tips or information came in. However, on September 19th, 1993, 115 miles away in Raleigh, North Carolina, a double murder occurred at a Food Lion grocery store. Even though it was also heinous like B-Lo's massacre, police in Windsor hoped that maybe whoever did these murders may have been responsible for the B-Lo murders, and maybe their suspect or suspects would finally be caught. But it was not to be, as two other suspects were named as the Food Lion killers, and none of their DNA matched at the B-Lo's crime scene. As the months and years went on, there were no new leads, no suspects, nothing to tell police or the victims' loved ones who committed the massacre at B-Lo. Detectives were only left with questions and theories. For one, after the suspect took the money, why did he resort to violence and killing? Also, why did he not conceal his face? And, if the suspect had just lost his job as an officer, why, when officers called other law enforcement agencies in North Carolina, the surrounding states, and Maryland, did they not report any officer losing their job recently? Also, why did the killer stack his victims in the manner he did? He had to have known he had such limited ammo, so was it because he thought if he shot on top of the stacks, the bullets would pass through everyone and kill them all? But no matter the theory, police had no suspects or leads. Curiously, though, almost a year later, on May 10th, 1994, a report came in of a robbery at a B-Lo location in the small town of Hertford, North Carolina, 34 miles away. Just like at the Windsor B-Lo, a man came in brandishing a gun. But unlike the Windsor B-Lo, this suspect was wearing a ski mask. Similarly to the Windsor B-Lo shooting, though, the suspect at the Hertford B-Lo bound the workers with duct tape and leashes and took some cash. However, he left his victims alive. Also, the manager at the Hertford B-Lo told detectives, unlike the Windsor B-Lo suspect, while they were both black males, the suspect at his store was stocky, not slender. This didn't mean it wasn't the same suspect, as the Windsor suspect could have gained weight, but more than likely, it was two different men. But with this information and no new leads, Windsor police had nothing. And over 30 years later, to this day, the massacre at the B-Lo grocery store in Windsor, North Carolina, remains unsolved. The story of the unsolved B-Lo massacre comes from the sources of WNCT-TV, the Roanoke Showin News Herald, WRAL News, and others I'll put in the notes. All right, so I don't really have much of an opinion on this episode. It's pretty much self-explanatory. Most of it's theory. No one has been convicted or brought to justice in the Belo Windsor Massacre. I want to also go ahead and say that I believe the Hertford, North Carolina Belo robbery is also unsolved. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm 99% sure that's unsolved as well. And like the theories, the police theories, it's just very weird. Like, why wouldn't the suspect conceal his face? Were there really two suspects in this case, like a getaway driver and the one who actually did the crime? Obviously, that's only what witnesses said, that they saw the person or people drive speed from the white car from the Belo and saw two black men. But no one really knows because this hasn't been verified, but just eyewitness, apparently. Always witnesses aren't always right, of course, so we just don't know for sure. Also, why, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying Mr. Jasper had anything to do with it, but I do wonder why the suspect left Jasper unharmed. Was he, you know, just tired, wanted to get out of there? Maybe he realized, you know, oh crap, there's already like three, four people dead already. I gotta get out of here. Because I think according to police reports, the suspect probably thought Thomas was dead as well, because he had his throat was slashed. But like I said, we don't know. No one knows who committed this crime, apparently, according to public record. The FBI, the federal agencies, the local agencies in North Carolina are all looking for the suspect or suspects of the Windsor Belo massacre. I would love to know what you all think of this case. Like I said, it's just my theories are already in the episode from the police reports and other reports. But like I said, I want to know what you all think. I'll drop this video or a post about the new episode on my Instagram page, 90s Crime Times Instagram page, I should say. And with that, thank you for tuning in to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And I hope you found this episode interesting. If you liked what you heard and have not done so, please leave a review for 90s Crime Time. Hopefully a good one. But if not, I understand. I would try to get better after all these years. I know that 90s Crime Time is a hit or miss to a lot of people. And I understand. I'm not a pro. But I do like to bring some 90s cases to you, whether you like how I tell them or not. You can also follow 90s Crime Time on Instagram, like I just mentioned, where I frequently post other 90s stories, primarily on the weekend. And I'll give a preview of today's case, just in case you don't dive right into the episode. And with that, stay safe and healthy, and I'll see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.